band leading us in worship. As always, they bring it. Man, I hope today that we can interact on this topic of For the 107. This past year, for those that are guests, on the first Sunday, the very first Sunday of the year, we did the Lord's Supper, and we created this big mural that's outside. So when you walk in from the entrance and you go toward the coffee bar, on your left, there's a big sign that says, "Remember." And as each family put a piece of this puzzle together, when we finished up two services, there was one piece that was missing, and that was the 107. And we created a sermon series, and now it's become part of our culture, that the 107 is the missing piece. The 107 is the family that has yet to walk through the doors. And so when we think about it, it's now so much a part of our culture that we hear people reference on a regular basis. Someone finally comes, they've been inviting, they say, "Hey, my 107 is going to be there today." And here's the cool thing, that at some point in our church, everyone was a 107. Everyone was someone that we were praying for, that we were trying to extend love to, light to, hope to. And so I hope that what you've experienced, if you're a member of this church, is exactly what you desire to give away. And today we're going to take a master class from Jesus himself and how to reach the 107. And I want you to begin thinking about who are the people that God is putting in your life that he has intended to use you as his hands and feet, as his salt and his light. And so, without further ado, we'll get into John chapter 4. And I want to segue by using an illustration about working out. I don't know if you've ever been a workout person. I am what we would consider an intermediate, okay? I am not advanced, okay? Intermediate. I'm not a beginner. I've worked out all my life, but I'm not an expert. And what an intermediate means is that you're just smart enough, you're just dangerous enough to get yourself in trouble, right? Anybody know what I'm talking about? And so I might be going to the gym, and this has happened to me on several occasions, or I might watch a YouTube video on working out or whatever, and what'll happen is there's some exercises that I've been doing, let's say, and I'm over there, and I'm like, you know, going hard after it, maybe I'm trying to do a squat, and someone eventually will come over to me, maybe it's a friend I'm working out with, I've even had strangers like, "You're not exactly doing that right." Anybody ever had this moment alive at anything? Like, "You don't look like you're doing that right." I'm like, "No, I got it. I'm doing it." Like, "No, what are you trying to work?" And they're like, "Oh, you're trying to work the hands." Well, you gotta get down there. That's as far as I can go. But you gotta get down, you gotta get parallel. And the truth of the matter is that what if you were doing an exercise incorrectly all your life? And you thought you were doing it right. And then when the real test came for you to use the muscle you thought you were working out, it failed. It didn't produce because you were doing it wrong. When you think about spirituality, every week we come into church and we're getting our reps in, our Sunday reps, right? I gotta get the sermon, I gotta get my worship, I gotta get my coffee, I gotta catch up with some people, my life group peeps, life group's kicking up this week. If you're not part of a life group, it's not because we don't have one for you, okay? You better not be that person like, "Well, I can't find a life." Yeah, we have them. We have them all over the place, okay? We have a life group for you. And so, whenever you're thinking about working out and getting your Sunday reps in, you know, what if people were going through the exercise of spirituality, the exercise of church, but they were doing it wrong? What if Jesus came along this morning and said, "You know, if you're doing it right, this is what it should produce. It should produce a 107. And if you look around in your life and you look around your history, you look around your Christianity, and there's no 107s in your life, then is it possible that you might be doing it wrong? Is it possible that you need to reevaluate your vision? Is it possible you need to reevaluate your position? Is it possible that you need to reevaluate your timing? Because God intended for all of us to produce. And it was because of someone else's investment that I stand on this stage today. And I'm acutely aware of it every week, that all I'm trying to do is take what's been given to me and give it away with all the passion that I have. Jesus illustrates this. John chapter 4 says he was going from Judea to Galilee. And that is significant in the sense that there were two kingdoms, because in the Old Testament, the kingdom got divided, and there was a northern kingdom and there was a southern kingdom. And Jesus was down in the dirty, dirty south of Jerusalem, and he was trying to reach all of the 107s that were in Jerusalem. And when he returned to his hometown area, there was a region called Galilee, which corresponds to Nazareth, and he was going back home. And so there was the north and there was the south, and then Samaria was in between. And we see a picture of the gospel right here, is that God was trying to reach the people in the south, he was trying to reach the people in the north, and he was trying to reach everyone in between, which corresponds to everyone was on the menu. Everybody was available for the gospel of Jesus Christ. So when we think about who are we going to share it with the person that's right in front of you. Don't worry about the person that's far from you. Share with the person that's right in front of you. So he goes from Judea up to Galilee, and it says he stops off in Samaria, and there's a very specific place that he went. We'll go to the next two verses. It says that, so he came to this place, Samaria, this town called Sychar, and it correlates in the Hebrew to this place called Shechem. Now I know everybody's like, ooh, and I know, deep breath here, okay? Sychar, Shechem, we'll get to it in just a moment for all my Bible nerds. Near the plot of ground that Jacob had given to Joseph. So this was a land that was inherited. So Jacob, patriarch, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, gave this land to Joseph. And so there they were. It says that they were on Joseph's land, who is the son, Jacob, Joseph, father, son. And they're on the father's, they're on the son's land, but they're on the at the father's well. And so it's Jacob's well, the water, on the son's territory. Very interesting play on words here. And so it says that they were sitting there at Jacob's well, and Jesus, tired as he was from his journey, sat down at this well, and it was about noon. Now I want you to think with me, okay? You don't have to think. You have to put your thinking caps on for this sermon, okay? This is not a child sermon. This is like an adult sit down at the buffet and pig out type of sermon, okay? Think with me for just a moment. Is there any other time in the Bible that Jesus was tired? Can you think of one other verse that says, and Jesus was tired? I don't think that you'll find one. This is the only time, only reference in the Bible that it says Jesus was tired. Now, if he's God and he's man, it seems like, you know, if he was tired, it was only because he kind of wanted to be tired. And if we, spoiler alert, he's going to send the disciples away to get some food. He's isolating himself for an opportunity to have a conversation with a 107. And it was almost like, I don't know if you follow the Bible very much, but like the disciples would get in the way. They would mess up the messaging a lot of times. And it was almost like, he's like, hey guys, I'm tired. You guys go ahead, go pick up some chicken over there at Sychar, and I'll be out here at this well hanging out. And so the first point that I want you to see right here in this message, there is such a great, great message. And the thing I want you to see is that position is pivotal. Position in life is pivotal. And there's relational position, and then there's physical, locational position. And so both of those are at play here. They're at Jacob's well on Joseph's property. And so you have to ask yourself, like, what are the odds that Jesus was going to have this encounter with this woman, famous woman, the Samaritan woman, a person outside of his culture, a person that would be off limits as far as conversation, because the Jews didn't like the Samaritans and the Samaritans didn't like the Jews. That's their people. We stay on this side, they stay on that side. We don't even need to hang out because we don't have anything in common. And so here they were at Jacob's well on Joseph's property. And so as you begin to think, probability-wise, I don't know if you're into statistical probabilities, but you have to start thinking, like, what are the odds that this would be random? What are the odds that this would be a random encounter on a random piece of dirt at a random well that belonged to Joseph, but it was Jacob's well? What are the odds that that would happen? And so I started thinking about that, and some very interesting things began to bubble to the surface. So what you'd have to know is that there was a lineage factor here. There's Abraham, there's Isaac, and then there's Jacob, and they're the three big patriarchs. And then Jacob, he had 12 sons, and one of them was named Joseph, and Joseph was the favored son. And he had this coat. Does anybody remember what it was called? Anybody? Shout it out. Coat of? That's right. It's the coat of many colors. They made movies about this, all right? And so whenever Joseph was born, it was because he had a second wife, and her name was Rachel, and that was the love of his life. And so Joseph was the first son, and so he was like, man, like, this is what I always dreamed of is that I would have this son, Joseph, and God favored him as well, and he gave him a dream, and he began to share this dream with his older brothers. Now imagine, raise your hand if you have older siblings in here. What if you like told your older sibling, like, hey, you're gonna bow down, and you're gonna kind of worship me. You know, how do you think that would go? Like, let's step out to the backyard. Let's find out, sissy boy, who's gonna worship who? Your coat of many colors. I see what's going on here. Anyway, it's kind of an aside lesson there. Be careful who you share your dream with. You know, naively, we believe that everyone's going to be for us and for our dream. Joseph shares his dream with his brothers and has the exact opposite effect. They begin to hate him. They begin to think, who does this punk think he is? As a matter of fact, their anger got so heated that they wanted to kill their brother, and they took him out to murder him. And as they threw him into a well, they started thinking there's no profit in killing him. And at just the right time, these gypsies come by and they sell their brother for the price of a slave, 20 shekels of silver. Now, Jesus, you'll find so many similitudes, was sold for the price of a slave, but inflation had inflated it from 20 shekels to 30 shekels, but they were both a favored son sold at the price of a slave. And so Joseph now goes on this roller coaster of life. And many of you have had some things in your life that didn't go the way you thought that they would go. And here is Joseph, who had this dream that God was going to lift him up. And now it feels like every step that he's taking is going in the wrong direction. He's like, he's not going up. He's going further and further down in the pit. And so much so that he becomes a slave in Potiphar's house, gets falsely accused of rape, gets put into prison in the inner dungeon of Pharaoh's house. And at the same time, like, God is positioning him. Positioning is pivotal. And if you are inside of God's purpose, see, you don't get to choose to live on purpose. I think it would be better to say you live in purpose. You see, I can't choose what's going to happen to me. I have to interact with God's will. And so I would rather be in purpose than try to control and be on purpose. You'll be frustrated if you try to do everything on purpose, because half the stuff that's happened to you in your life, did it go the way that you thought it was gonna go? No, it did not. But if you're living in purpose, God can work with all the twists and turns and still get you to where he's trying to go. Example. So Joseph is in Pharaoh's house and he is elevated and he ends up saving the entire world because this famine hits, but he had told Pharaoh to save all this grain for 7 years. And then his brothers come down and they come groveling and they don't even recognize Joseph. And this is the moment where I'm so glad that God knows my limitations, because I'm gonna tell you, I'm a revenge person. I'm just full disclosure. Anybody else in here? Like, revenge is best served cold. Someone cuts me off in traffic, I mean, I am just driving like Dale Earnhardt trying to get back up there to cut them back. Anybody? Am I talking to any of my people in here? Come on, sinners, raise your hand. You know what I'm talking about. If you had the opportunity to get revenge on that person that did that to you, oh, you would do it. You would. I would have too. There his brothers are. Joseph in the position of power now, just like God said he would be. And instead of revenge, he gives them mercy. Wow. As a result of his mercy, he has a reunion with his father, Jacob. And on his dad's deathbed, he calls all of his children in and begins to hand out inheritances. And Joseph is given this one piece of dirt. As a matter of fact, his father, in foreknowledge, prophetically buys him a burial plot in this town of Shechem, which is gonna be the town of Sychar just a moment ago that we were talking about. This is all going to come together in just a moment. And so this one piece of dirt that Joseph inherited is where Jesus is going to have this conversation. And so Joseph, even prophetically trusting in what his father told him, begins to have this conversation about how to handle his bones. Now watch this, Genesis chapter 50. They are down in Egypt and Joseph gives a prophetic word to the people around him. He said, now look, I'm gonna die. I'm going to die, but my Father has already picked out a plot for me in the promised land in this place called Shechem. Whenever I die, you put my bones in a sarcophagus, because he's like King Tut, okay? If you've seen King Tut, like, Joseph didn't have a pine box, all right? He had a sarcophagus, all right? They put him, it says they took his body and they put him in a sarcophagus, and he was in Egypt 350 years in his mummified state. And then Moses comes and says, it's time to go. Time to go. Let my people go, okay? And so they grab the sarcophagus and start carrying it out to the Red Sea. And whenever the Red Sea's parted, there was Joseph in his sarcophagus. They went across on dry ground. And then they go out there in the wilderness, wander around 40 years. They're carrying Joseph around. And then it comes to Joshua, and the Jordan is parted, and they go across, and they're walking around Jericho. It says that they walked around one time a day for 6 days, and on the seventh day, they marched seven times. Now just imagine how crazy this scene was, that you got old Joseph, and they're like, hey, don't forget Joseph. And they're like, I pick him up, like, oh, going around this city. For seven times, they're carrying this sarcophagus around, and it says that then they defeated 21 kingdoms. They're carrying Joseph's body around, and at the end, in Joshua chapter 24, after they defeated all the promised land, watch this. Joshua 24 says, and then they took his bones, and they buried him in the exact plot that his father picked out. In Hebrews 11, Paul, reminiscing in the New Testament about this Old Testament thing, he said, whenever Joseph did this, he did so by faith, forecasting the Exodus, that God would not leave them in slavery, but would get them to freedom. And that was all wrapped up in his position. Position is pivotal. The message that he's preaching to you today is, while I'm in Egypt and while my bones are in Egypt, he said prophetically, he said, I know where I am, but where I am is not where God intends me to be. And I know, I trust in God's promise that my Father has already picked out a spot for me. And if my Father picked it out, the promise is going to come to pass. And where I am is only temporary. It is a season, not a life sentence. And that God is going to get me to the place exactly where I'm supposed to be. Now, what if we could take that and apply that truth to your life this morning? If things have not gone the way that you thought that they would go, if you turned and you trusted in God's word, is it possible that God could have allowed you to go through all these things? And he said, where I have you now is not where I intend to keep you, but you're learning something along the way that's going to help you later on in life. And if the Father knows how to get the Son to the exact spot at the exact time, do you think it's possible that if you transferred your trust from you to him, that he could get you to exactly where he intended you to be? Joseph is buried exactly where his father intended him. And then hundreds of years later, what are the odds? At some point, like probability, you have to say that it's impossible. We're beyond improbable. It's impossible that this would be by chance, that the one piece of dirt that Joseph was given, that there was a territory that belonged to the son, but there was a well that belonged to the father, and that this woman comes walking out to this one well, at this one place, at this one piece of dirt, and it's almost like there's like a cosmic cage match, and God is trying to fight for this woman's soul, and he set up and moved eternity so that he could have this opportunity to share with her the gospel of Christ. No person sitting in this room, let me stand back, listen to me. No person in this room will go to hell because God didn't try. No person will go to hell in this room because God didn't try to save you. He has moved all of eternity just for you and I to have this conversation this morning. And what you do with it is up to you. But don't you dare say that God didn't speak to you, that God didn't try to reach you. He picked out one piece of dirt on the earth and then happened to hundreds of years later walk in this place and have this conversation with this woman. Now let's unfold it. Let's go to the next passage, John chapter 4. It says that Jesus, the Samaritan woman, came out to draw water, and Jesus said to her, will you give me a drink? Will you give me a drink? The Samaritan woman said to him, you are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan. You could also put, you are a man, and I am a woman. I know your people don't like my people, and my people don't like your people. So I don't even know why we're having this conversation. Man, you can never reach 107s if you have the mentality that those are those people. Like, as a Christian, please, please, listen, hear me out. Quit naming the name of Jesus if you're going to be prejudiced or racist or some kind of ist against a lost soul that's trying to get to heaven. Because if God loved you, I promise you, you were the others. You were not a Jew, you were a Gentile. And that means that Jesus had to reach way outside of his culture to have a conversation so that you would have a chance. So don't tell me that anyone is unworthy of the gospel of Christ. So as a Christian, everyone should be available for a conversation because God wants to change the world and he wants to use you to do it. She had a preconceived idea. She's sitting here arguing with God. And I guarantee you, there's someone sitting in this very room this morning, and guess what? You're the woman at the well. You're arguing with God. He's trying to help you, but you think that you got your own ideas about the way that it has been, about what you were born into, about how you were raised, about the precedent that has been set in your past. But you should be bigger than that. Oh my gosh. Not only is position pivotal, vision is critical. Look at this. It says, Jesus said, no, put it back. Jesus answered her. He said, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that you're talking to right now, he said, you would have asked me and I would have given you living water. Now watch this. Position is pivotal, vision is critical. Now, watch this. In this passage, in John chapter 4, there's at least three, there's really four or five, but three that we're gonna focus on. If you are looking with your natural eyes, if you are walking by sight and not by faith, then you'll miss the entire picture that God is trying to paint. Because in this chapter, this one chapter, there is a well filled with water that Jesus asked for a drink, but he never intends to drink. So there's water that he's never going to drink. It says that his disciples went into town to get food that he's never going to eat. And then when they get back, he's talking to this woman and he said, look at these fields, they're white unto harvest, but they weren't white unto harvest. We know scientifically, when he looked out in the fields, the disciples saw nothing but green. They had sprouted, but the fruit wasn't on there yet. And so they're so confused. There's water he's not gonna drink, there's food he's not gonna eat, and now he's saying, look at something that we can't see. Can you imagine how frustrated you'd have been if you were a disciple of Jesus, that he's trying to paint a picture for you, but if you don't have vision, vision is so vital that you have to learn to see it through God's eyes. That it's not about the well and the water. It's not about the food that's physical. It's not about the green that's coming up out of the earth. He said there's something spiritual. He said there's a different well filled with a different water. He said there's a different food that will sustain you even when your body is tired. There's a different way to look at the harvest than with your naturalistic eyes. Vision is so vital. It would be impossible for you to be living in Frisco, Texas, North Dallas area, and there not be 107s all around you. So let me ask you a litmus test question. When's the last time you saw a 107? When's the last time you invited a 107? When's the last time you shared with a 107? Are you walking by life? Walking by these lost souls? Walking past these hurting people left and right all around you? And you're doing your version of the exercise, but somehow your version never has vision to see all the people that are lost around you? That'd be impossible. That'd be impossible. Throw a rock, you can hit a sinner in this area. Can I get an A? Yes. So it's not the opportunity, it's the vision. If you're not looking for the 107, you won't see them. What if somebody's eternity was wrapped up in your obedience? God is not asking you to reach the world. He's asking you to reach the one that's right in front of you. Jesus has this incredible conversation If you knew. If you knew, then you would. I love that. That summarizes everything. I don't know if anyone else has ever coached anyone. I've coached all my children, all right? I love coaching. Some people might say I overcoach. Can anybody like that in here? Anybody like you just have to help people? Anybody? Like, you know, some people say you have to annoy people. I say help people anyway. Have you ever seen someone doing something wrong and you go over there and offer some advice? Anybody? Anybody that? And like you get in the middle of the advice and they look at you and they say, I know. Anybody? 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 I know. I know. I know. I know. I know. No, you don't know. Like, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. You don't know. I remember vividly, vividly, one of my children, I will not name any names. We first went out to throw the football. And when they threw it, it did not look right. Can I get a witness? Like anybody else, a kid in here? Like it was like on the side and I was like, hey, your dad, no. He goes, but it feels right. No, I don't care how it feels. I said, it looks terrible. I mean, people are gonna make fun of you one day if you keep throwing like that. But in his mind, he's arguing with me, his father, who knows how to throw a football and telling me that he knows. No. God isn't telling you something because you already know it. He's telling you because you don't know it. Here is this woman. She's thirsty. She goes out to a well. Now here, back it up. Position is pivotal. Vision is vital. Timing is critical. Here we have choice and divine chance, and they're always doing this dance. Hey, listen to it. God is the author of eternity, but he still gave you a choice. And some people think, like there's this doctrine called, whatever, predestination, where everything is decided. If everything is decided, then what is the point? Do you hear what I like, you have a choice. I promise you, you chose to come here. You chose whether or not you'd marry the person you're married, for better or worse. Some of you made bad decisions. Anyway, so it's your choice. You chose how many kids you would have. Some of you, I don't understand why you had so many. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I can't keep up with three. People have five, six, seven. I'm like, God bless you. And so you have a choice. But choice and divine chance are doing this dance. And here is this woman that's been through five marriages, all kinds of busted up and broken, looking for love in all the wrong places. And she happens to be at this one piece of dirt, at this one piece of time that the Son of God was going from the south to the north and stopped off in a place that would have been forbidden, had a conversation that would have been taboo. And now here this woman has a chance to change her entire lot in life. Has a chance to change eternity. This morning, choice and divine chance are doing their dance right now in your heart. You have a choice on how this ends for you. And I wonder how many people are standing at the wrong well. She came out to the physical well to draw water. And Jesus said, when you drink that, guess what? You'll thirst again. And so many of you, let's be honest, every Monday you're going out to the well. You're punching that clock for that well. And you think, man, if I just dip enough water out of this well, someday it'll satisfy me. If I just arrive at this position, if I just get to this title, if I just get to this number in the bank, oh my gosh, I'll go out believing in the wrong well. Do you know that if you look to the things of this world, whether it be in your earthly relationships, your marriage, some people even substitute their children for their own success, I don't know. If you look to money, you can go out to that well every day, and guess what? After you've drank from that well, you're gonna thirst again. Jesus is saying, what if there was a different well? What if you were standing at the wrong well, wishing for life to be different, and you're asking a well that can never answer you? He said, if you knew the gift of God, then you would. Man, this is a nightmare scenario for me. What if you are going to life every day, going to school every day, going to work every day, going to marriage every day, going to parenting every day, and you're standing at the wrong well? What if you're looking in the wrong place? This is my nightmare. God is sitting here telling you, if you knew the gift of God, if you knew that I had orchestrated all of eternity just so you could hear this one message in this one moment, then you would ask. And he said, I would answer. Wait, the love that you're looking for, God could give you that. The forgiveness that you desperately need for that darkness that's in your life and the sins that you've done, God could give you that. The relationships that you've lost or that are damaged, are you telling me that God could give me what I need to make it through to the next season? And you're sitting here this morning in your heart, right now in this moment, arguing with God. Saying, well, this is the way it's always been, God. Yeah. And he's saying, that's the way it'll always be unless we make a different choice today. Golly. God has moved heaven and earth. Just like Jacob had already picked out a place for his son, what if I told you that the Father in heaven had already picked out a place for his son? What if I told you that they scheduled a time and a place where Jesus would die and where he'd be buried? What if I told you that just like Joseph said, I know where I am, but I also know where my father intended me to be. And when Jesus stood before Pilate, he said, you have no power over me except what my who? Father has given you. And what if I could tell you that just like Jesus rose on the third day, what if I told you that God has already picked out a spot for you in eternity in heaven? He's already picked it out. And if you would say yes to the gift of God today, if you would make the choice to interact with divine chance, he said, then you could inherit what I already picked out for you, that you could have the abundant life that Jesus Christ offers to all who would say yes to the gift of God. He's already picked it out. It's up to you. Don't sit here and say life is doing this. Don't sit here and say what you don't have. You have a divine opportunity to interact with God this morning. No. It's your choice. It's your choice what you do with the eternity that's in front of you. Let's pray. Father, we come before you. God, we ask. We ask on behalf of every 107 sitting in this room. We ask, God, that their mouths would be silenced in this moment, that their eyes would be open, their ears would hear, God, that it's choice. Do they want to change? Do they want life instead of death? Do they want love instead of hate? Do they want joy instead of bitterness? God, if they only knew your gifts and everything that you have available, God, they could change right now. Not next week, not next month, not next relationship, not next marriage, not next kid, not next paycheck. But God, if they looked at you in the eyes, they could not resist the love that you offered them. No one has ever loved them like that. God, we would be careful this morning that if he has found you at the well this morning in the valley of decision, I pray that you would say yes to Jesus. No matter what it is, that you would say yes to Jesus and that you would begin to fall in love with what he's in love with. And I'm gonna tell you what he loves the most is the 107. I hope that you would change your heart this morning, that you would change your lifestyle, and that you would open up to the possibility that God has at least one that's waiting on you to make the right decision. Would you guys stand? As we worship, we give our hearts to God and we give him all the praise for finding us when we were lost, for moving all of eternity just to have a conversation. I hope today that if that's you, that you would worship with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind.